Today's episode of My Life as a Foodie is brought to you by GoDaddy. I've used GoDaddy for all of my domain names for over 15 years. SSL certificates, some hosting, email for clients and myself. They're trusted, tried, and true. You can get your own domain, build a website, fully hosted with email and more with GoDaddy. As a special offer, listeners of the show can save 30% off their order by visiting trygodaddy.com/foodie. With award-winning 24/7 support, more than 14 million customers worldwide, and over 62 million registered domain names, GoDaddy has been helping their customers kick ass by giving them the tools, insights, and the people to transform their ideas and personal initiative into success. Whether you have a new idea or are an established business, the key to success online starts with a great domain name. And for me, that starts with GoDaddy. In fact, I just got a new one the other day. I was wrong about GuyFieri.com. So find out why so many business owners choose GoDaddy for their domain names and save 30% off your order by visiting trygodaddy.com/foodie. That's trygodaddy.com/foodie. And you know, look, I'll be honest. I have no idea when that trend is really going to die down. Kale, acai berries, turmeric. This is all stuff that's been around for centuries, and people have been eating it for centuries. But listen, you don't have to eat it. If you don't like it, don't eat it. You know, eat something else. There's lots of stuff. There are tons of healthy options out there, or find new ways to prepare it. Guy said to me last week, he said he likes to add olive oil to his kale. And I said, really? He said, yeah, it makes it a lot easier to slide it into the trash. All right, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. As you know, I took a very long break from all of this, and I really didn't even know if and when I would come back to this. And I always said that there were going to be two things that would do that, and they both involved death. One would be the death of Howard Stern, who was very influential to me in doing podcasts in the beginning. I liked his style. I thought it was fun. And I always wanted to do something like this ever since I was a little kid. The second one was the death of the inspiration for the show itself. And that was Anthony Bourdain. And as you all well know, a couple months ago, Bourdain took his own life. And immediately, I thought about what I was going to do. The day that it happened, I kind of chilled a bit. I normally, when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do is I turn on the computer, my devices, I catch up on the news, have some coffee before I get started on my work day. On this particular day, I didn't turn anything on. I had coffee, read a magazine, and about an hour later, turned everything on and everything blew up. And it was shocking. I think it would have been shocking anyway, but it was even more shocking that I was getting all these messages and everybody knew how important he was to me and the show. And they wanted to know my thoughts. Well, my initial thoughts, you know, I'm in shock. I think anybody who knew Bourdain kind of knew that sooner or later something like this would happen. We not necessarily this, but something like this. And it's not something you can easily wrap your head around immediately. And everybody on social media was paying an homage to him in some way, posting their pictures with him, selfies, kind of paying tribute in their own way. I didn't do any of that. I didn't even address it because I knew that I wanted to do it here because it meant more to me than just something I would fill in 160 characters or, you know, an Instagram post. And it was tough for me. And Steve Charbot, who messaged me on Facebook, wanted to know, you know, my thoughts. And I said that I didn't really have any. I was sad. I was shocked. This was a loss. I don't think anybody in the food, in the world of food or in food entertainment, I don't think it's a loss any of us are going to rebound from in the way that we normally would from any other celebrity death. This was a bit more. And I guess what I want to touch on today is legacy. Because as I started thinking about what I was going to say, and as you know, I rehearse my show in my car. I like to be alone. I like to know what I'm going to say going in. I don't write it all down. I just kind of get an idea of what I want to talk about, practice it a little bit, and then open the mic and do my thing, which is what I'm doing now. So just as I'm ready to do this, more bad news comes down. I think this was about 3 weeks ago, maybe not even that long. Jonathan Gold, he passed away from pancreatic cancer. Now, suicide is bad. Pancreatic cancer is worse, I think, because it's not, I mean, it's a death sentence. It's like if stage 5 cancer exists, that's what pancreatic cancer is. Steve Jobs had it, and he survived a long time. I mean, he got a lot of treatment, and he lasted a lot longer than most people. Jonathan Gold got it. 3 weeks later, he was dead. And nobody knew, other than people that were very close to him, that he was even sick. So that was a major, major loss for food writers and everyone that's in the food community. It was then I messaged Peter Stuttgart. I said, this year is a major kick in the balls. 2016 kind of sucked for the country politically because we were, you know, starting this giant division, and socially our culture just started to really get ugly. 2017, you know, things still got ugly, and we've got all this crap going on with our president and investigations and turmoil overseas, and it's crazy bad. But 2018 for food has really just been absolutely atrocious. You know, Paul Bocuse died, I think, in January or February. He was old, so you get that. You know, you're not going to live forever. But still, he was a legend. And we paid a lot of attention to that. Then Bourdain dies. And that was just a giant shock. Then Jonathan Gold dies. And just a few days before I'm ready to open the mic again, I get news that Joel Robuchon dies. And it was really weird because just the day before, I was in a bookstore with my daughter, and I saw 32 Yolks, which is Eric Ripert's book about his life, and it tells his story. And I had opened it up, and I was reading through it, and there was this whole long chapter on, you know, his influence from Joel Robuchon, and how Robuchon babied his food, really took care with a few ingredients, and made dishes that you just won't see in restaurants anymore. He was a true classic French chef. And of course, he was old too. But, you know, and you know people are going to pass away. But it's still a shock when it happens. So all of these people leave behind something for us. I think initially, the response to Bourdain's death was, what are we going to do now? And I think to an extent, the same thing with Jonathan Gold. You know, it's not going to be the same. And you're absolutely right. It's not going to be the same. But you have two options here. You can simply walk away from it and say, I guess that's it. You know, these people aren't going to be replaced. They're irreplaceable. That thing that they brought to the table is not going to be brought back again. And I guess that's it. You know, and turn away from it. What the other thing we can do, which is what I'm choosing to do, is to live within their legacy. Because I think what they've done, the body of work that both Bourdain and Gold have left behind, is something that will last us for a very long time. Look at it this way. If you go back from day one, the very first thing that Bourdain did, okay, even if for you it's a Cook's Tour book, or the very first episode of A Cook's Tour, and you go all the way forward through all of the work that he did on TV and in his books, back to back to back to back to back, that's going to last a long time. It would take you a while to get through all of that. Go through all of Gold's work, a collection of his stories, which I'm sure there will be a book of his collection. Read all of that. You can live within that legacy for a long time. It can continue to inspire you. It can continue to give you this place you can go to relive those memories, because it's those memories that that's the gift that these people leave for us. And it's funny because I don't know how long ago it was, maybe 6 months, 8 months ago. I get depressed easily about our current climate. There's a lot of fighting on Twitter, social media. Facebook's just a giant animalistic shit show. I want to escape from it. It's hard to turn your back to all of this because you don't want to lose touch with what's going on. But what's going on is horrible. And people say it's not healthy to live in the past. For me, I don't think it's very healthy to live in the present. I think the present sucks. So I want to go back and live in the past, at least for a little while. I think it provides a very nice respite. I mean, it's something we can go back to and pretend things are okay again. I mean, you think about it. 18 years ago, when Bourdain did A Cook's Tour, 18 years sounds like a long time, but it really isn't in, you know, the long and short of things. I mean, I'm 53, so 18 years is a drop in the hat. When he did that show, I was 35. So, hey, look, I mean, that's not that bad. We're not living in, it's not like I'm going back to the 30s and saying, wow, look at that. Look how good it was before Hitler. It's not like that at all. What I am doing is going back and saying, look how good it was before those cocksuckers drove those two planes into the Twin Towers. And then all hell broke loose. And suddenly we were living in fear. The world was very unsafe, continues to be unsafe. Instead, I'll plop in a DVD. I've got the collection of A Cook's Tour, all of the episodes. And for 25 minutes, I'll disappear with Bourdain in a little cafe in France or Portugal or Tokyo or somewhere in Spain. And I'll just pretend that things are okay, that we're having, you know, a ham sandwich and drinking a glass of wine and exploring someone's farm, and things are nice. And I kind of imagine that maybe those places still exist. Chances are they still do. That maybe those people who worked there still work there. The owners still own it. Maybe their kids are working there now. And that legacy is being carried on by the next generation. It's safe. It's a nice place to be. And I feel better about it. You know, it's a really nice feeling to be able to go back there and just forget that, you know, things are so bad right now. Because things once were not so bad. Maybe they were bad somewhere else, but not everywhere. And this isn't hyperbole here. I mean, look, read the news. You know, turn the TV on. It's pretty pathetic. So I think it's a nice thing. And that's the gift that Bourdain left behind. As well as gold. I mean, some of his restaurant reviews. These places, obviously, restaurants change a lot. Pop-ups, you know, food trucks. They're not around forever. But some of the restaurants, some of the holes in the wall, are still there. And his words live on. In fact, if you go to a lot of these places, his review of the place from the LA Times or LA Weekly is in a frame on the wall. So that lives there. And they take pride in that. And so should you. You know, you should take a serious look at where we're going with our lives in regards to, you know, what makes us happy. Because what does make you happy? Obviously, you're listening to the show, food makes you happy. Exploring new things makes you happy. People were saying, you know, this is what I'll miss about Bourdain. In a lot of cases, what they're going to miss about Bourdain was the discovery of new things. The discovery of new food, new chefs, new restaurants. You don't need Bourdain for that. Every year, they release the top 100 restaurants in the world. Every year this happens. You've got that list every year. You want to discover a new restaurant? Look them up. There you go. You want to discover a new chef? Food & Wine has the best new chef of the year. You've got all kinds of magazines that help you out there. Savoir Magazine does the same thing. So that's not what Bourdain brought to the table. You can go back to all this stuff, watch every episode he ever did of all the shows that he did. There's a ton there. You don't need any more inspiration than that. If you want to try something new, there's a shitload of dishes that you can experiment with within those shows. And that's what I've done with his show, everything that he did, all of his material. It provided inspiration for me to try new things. I didn't need a recipe, I just needed to see what it was. He described it well enough. And then I riff on it, and I feel like, you know, I'm kind of reliving that. No, for me, that's not what Bourdain provided. I think the most important thing he did, especially with his Parts Unknown show, was that he allowed us the opportunity to see people as he did. We have misconceptions about people. If they don't live in this country, if they're not the same color as we are, if they don't believe in the same God that we do, if they don't pray the same way, they don't speak the same language, they don't have the same politics, we don't feel like we're like them. But really, we are. And that's what Bourdain did well. He showed, he peeled back all the layers and showed that these people were human beings just like us. They had heartbeats just like us. They loved people just like we do. It didn't matter, you know, what color skin they were, what language they spoke, what politics they believed in, what God they prayed to, or whether or not they prayed to a God at all. What mattered to him was that they were human beings, often misunderstood. They were disenfranchised in most cases. He put a magnifying glass in front of that and allowed us to see human beings as human beings. That's what he did well. That's what he did that made the most impact for me as a fellow human being. I didn't always agree with Bourdain's politics. In fact, in a lot of cases, I disagreed. I felt, you know, I'm a liberal at heart. I wasn't a super liberal like he was. And it bothered me for the longest time. And over time, and it had nothing to do with him, my empathy for a lot of people started to grow exponentially over time, especially in the last 5 years. I've become even more empathetic because I don't like war. I don't like hate. I don't like hate speech. I don't mind if you have a difference of opinion and you want to, like, you know, have a verbal, you know, sparring match with people. I think that's healthy. In a lot of cases, when I've done it, it's been in a joking fashion. I don't hate people. People think I hate Paula Deen. I don't hate Paula Deen. You know, I think some of the stuff she's done has been irresponsible, but I don't wish her harm. Although I did laugh when a ham hit her in the face. It's completely different. We're humans. If something happened to her, I'd feel bad. She's human. She has kids. You know, in fact, she's a nice woman. She's just, I don't know, a little annoying sometimes. But that's okay. So am I. In fact, I'm a lot annoying. I'm not a pimple on her ass, in fact. I'm nobody to her. But see, I think that's the thing. We're a lot smaller than we think we are. You know, we act like we're big shit. We're not. And I think Bourdain did a very good job of keeping us in check. And when you disagreed with him, he'd shit all over you. And there were times when, you know, Bourdain became a bit of a bully on social media, and I didn't like it. In fact, it was when he started to become a bully that I started to distance myself from him and had, for a while, stopped watching his show. I thought, who the fuck this guy think he is? The whole thing with Eater. I know I've talked about this before. When Bourdain was going to do this this Rome show on CNN, he talked about a dictatorship and how he sees how that works in some cases, and he could see how it could happen in this country, and maybe it might be a good thing for us. He said those things, or something like that. Then what Eater did was, they had released a trailer, CNN did. Eater posted the trailer, and the guy just basically reiterated what Bourdain said. Bourdain catches wind of this, realized it makes him look like shit, so he pounds the guy to death and says, I'm out to ruin your career, and then doesn't relent, continues to hammer this kid. I don't know if the guy's still writing or not, but Jesus, Bourdain went after his career, tried to kill his livelihood because it made him look bad in his eyes. And it didn't. In fact, the episode itself, kind of taken out of context, you can blame CNN for that. They're the ones that produced the trailer. If you're taken out of context, don't blame the person reporting on it. You know, if all they're doing is reiterating what you said. No, Bourdain took it completely the wrong way and did the wrong thing. And it was inexcusable to me because it went against what I believed he really did believe in. And over time, I don't know, he dropped it and it went on their way. But as it turns out, Asia Argento, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing her name right, he, after that episode, news broke that he had separated from his wife, who he was still married to at the time of his death. That's a whole other story. Nobody knows why Bourdain committed suicide. There's an assumption, and there were rumors, that days before he hung himself in his hotel room, and God forbid, you know, Eric Repair, I don't know if he found him, if he was the first one in, there were mixed stories there, but Repair saw him and identified his body. And Repair is this, you know, peaceful, kind Zen Buddhist. And this poor guy, what a year he had. Bourdain, then Robichon. But anyway, I'm getting off track here, which is easy to do for me right now. He was dating Asia Argento like right after his separation from Octavia. They dated for a while, and apparently they had a quote-unquote open relationship, meaning he could see other people and so could she. I'm not sure he ever did. When you get to a certain age, you start to lose interest in sleeping around, unless you're just hypersexual and you can't keep it in your pants. You know, you don't look at other women anymore if you're really truly in love. And I think this goes at any age. If you're in love with somebody, I'm not too sure you're going to be putting your dick in everything. But it seemed like Bourdain was kind of true to her. Well, I guess some paparazzi shot pictures of her with this young guy who was in some way related to a foundation or some special thing that she was doing with, I don't know if it was the Me Too movement or something. But they were holding hands and getting a little too close, and they looked pretty intimate, these pictures. So this guy shoots him. It appears in some paper. Just by coincidence, a day or two later, Bourdain's found hanging in his hotel room. And pictures of Bourdain leading up to that, there were pictures on Instagram from 0.0 while they were on location in France shooting with Repair. Bourdain didn't look too good. And Repair said that, you know, he had been depressed. He was very dark, very sullen. The guy worked way too hard. You know, some of the other stories coming out was that he was very, he just never stopped working. And the crew that followed him around and shot, you know, shot the video and worked on the production, the crew would mix it up. Sometimes they'd shoot, sometimes these other guys would come in and they'd shoot so the other guys could have a break. Bourdain didn't take any breaks. He worked all the time, and he worked really hard. And when he wasn't doing that, he had his publishing company, or he was working on something else. I mean, the guy was always working or writing or doing something. Maybe he worked himself to death. Or maybe he just realized that, you know, it was too much and he had to go. I have had, in my life, a very different view on people who commit suicide. I've always seen it as a sin because that's what I was taught. It's murder. And it's the ultimate sin if you kill yourself. For me, it wasn't just that, but I mean, it's very selfish. As far as I was concerned, it, you know, you're not thinking about anybody else but yourself. I can't handle this. I'm going to kill myself. What about your family? What about your wife who loves you? Your kids? What about them? What are they going to do? You know, I know I'm not alone thinking this way, but I've started to appreciate and understand mental illness and depression a little bit more. And it is different for these people. They're not thinking like you and I. We can rationalize, Jesus, I can't kill myself. What about my kids? They don't think this way. For them, it's a horrible place to be. They can't get out of it. They feel backed against a wall. And there is no rationale to it. It's curtains. And that's that. So it's sad. And that's more than likely what Bourdain faced. Because from the pictures I saw, I think they were on the back of a gondola or something like that. It was some kind of a trike or a mule, or they were riding something ridiculous. And Repair's in front with a helmet, smiling, looking like a knob. Bourdain's on the back with a helmet, looking like a knob, except a very depressed knob. He was looking down on the ground, not happy, very dark. And that should have been kind of an indication right there that things weren't good. And people would ask him, are you okay? He'd say, yeah, I'm fine. You know, Bourdain wasn't one of those people that would just open up, from what I'm hearing. I mean, I didn't know the guy. Met him, I think, twice. Honestly, to kind of get back to what I want to say here, we are living in a time when we need escapes, and I think the work of these people, the work of these men, Bocuse, Robichon, Bourdain, Gold, it's there for a reason. And this is why it's important to produce content, whether it's an article, a blog post, podcast, video, TV show, movies, whatever you can do, leave something behind for people to remember you by. Photos are great. Writing is good. If you've got a diary, write something down. Leave something behind for people to have when you die. Because believe it or not, there's someone out there that cares about you. And they're going to want something to remember you by. And what we've been given here is a great gift. A gift that will keep on giving. Like a, you know, like a subscription. It's a literal work that, you know, that lives on. And I don't think it's necessarily unhealthy to go back and live in that moment for as long as you like. If it makes you happy, if it provides a means of escape for you, why not? What's wrong with that? You know, people want to say that it's you're going backward. It's not moving forward. You should always be moving forward. Well, what if you look at it this way? Turn around 180 degrees and take a step. You can say that's a step backward. I say it's a step forward, just in the direction from where you came. And maybe if we did that a little more often, took a step backward from where we came, looking back, maybe we can learn a little bit more about who we are and where we've come from. And that will help us to move forward. Music in this episode from Mimosa. If you like the music, you can download the song on the iTunes Store or on from Amazon. Just follow the links on the website, mylifeisafoodie.com, and support the artists. If you need a website and you'd like to support the show, go to trygodaddy.com/foodie and save 30% off your first order. That's trygodaddy.com/foodie. Save 30%, support the show, get a great domain name, super cheap. I use, for every domain name I register, GoDaddy. They're fantastic. They have hosting services, everything you need to support a website, whether it's for your business or personal, doesn't matter. Thanks for listening. Tune in next time. Great guest coming up shortly. You guys are going to love it. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie, and I'll see you soon. Ciao.